after him, which was more or less the case. Madam Tracy heard Mr. Shadwell's slow tread come up the stairs. It was slower than usual and paused every few steps. Normally he came up the stairs as if he hated every one of them. She opened her door. He was leaning against the landing wall. "Why, Mr. Shadwell," she said, "whatever have you done to your hand?"
"Get away from me, woman," Shadwell groaned. "I dunno know me own powers."
"Why are you holding it out like that?"
Shadwell tried to back into the wall. "Stand back, I tell you. I cannot be responsible."
"What on earth has happened to you, Mr. Shadwell?" said Madam Tracy, trying to take his hand.
"Nothing on earth! Nothing on earth!"
She managed to grab his arm. He, Shadwell, scourge of evil, was powerless to resist being drawn into her flat. He'd never been in it before, at least in his waking moments. His dreams had furnished it in silks, rich hangings, and what he thought of as scented unguents. Admittedly, it did have a bead curtain in the entrance to the kitchenette, and a lamp made rather inexpertly from a Chianti bottle, because Madam Tracy's apprehension of what was chic, like Aziraphale's, had grounded around 1953. And there was a table in the middle of the room with a velvet cloth on it, and on the cloth the crystal ball which increasingly was Madam Tracy's means of earning a living. "I think you could do with a good lie down, Mr. Shadwell," she said, in a voice that brooked no argument, and led him on into the bedroom. He was too bewildered to protest.
"But young Newt is out there," Shadwell muttered, "enthralled her heathen passions and occult wiles."
"Then I'm sure he'll know what to do about them," said Madam Tracy briskly, whose mental picture of what Newt was going through was probably much closer to reality than was Shadwell's. "And I'm sure he wouldn't like to think of you getting yourself worked up into a state here. Just you lie down, and I'll make us both a nice cup of tea." She disappeared in a clacking of bead curtains. Suddenly, Shadwell was alone on what he was just capable of recalling through the wreckage of his shattered nerves was a bed of sin, and right at this moment was incapable of deciding whether that was in fact better or worse than not being alone on a bed of sin. He turned his head to take in his surroundings. Madam Chase's concepts of what was erotic stemmed from the days when young men grew up thinking that women had beach balls affixed firmly in front of their anatomy. Brigitte Bardot could be called a sex kitten without anyone bursting out laughing, and there really were magazines with names like Girls, Giggles and Garters. Somewhere in this cauldron of permissiveness, she had picked up the idea that soft toys in the bedroom created an intimate, coquettish air. Shadwell stared for some time at a large, threadbare teddy bear, which had one eye missing and a torn ear. It probably had a name like Mr. Buggins. He turned his head the other way. His gaze was blocked by a pyjama case shaped like an animal that may have been a dog, but there again might have been a skunk. It had a cheery grin.
"Ugh,"
he said. But recollection kept storming back. He really had done it. No one else in the army had ever exorcised a demon, as far as he knew. Not Hopkins, not Siftings, not Diceman. Probably not even Witchfinder Company Sergeant Major Narka. The WA enjoyed a renaissance during the great days of Empire expansionism. The British Army's endless skirmishes frequently brought it up against witch doctors, bone pointers, shaman, and other occult adversaries. This was the cue for the deployment of the likes of WA CSM Narka, whose striding, bellowing, 6'6", 18-stone figure, clutching an armour-plated book, 8-pound bell, and specially reinforced candle, could clear the veldt of adversaries faster than a Gatling gun. Cecil Rhodes wrote of him, "Some remote tribes consider him to be a kind of god, and it is an extremely brave or foolhardy witch-doctor who will stand his ground with CSM Narka bearing down on him. I would rather have this man on my side than two battalions of Gurkhas." Not even Witchfinder Company Sergeant Major Narka, who held the all-time record for most witches found. Sooner or later, every army runs across its ultimate weapon, and now it existed, Shadwell reflected, on the end of his arm. Well, sod no first use. He'd have a bit of a rest, seeing as he was here, and then the powers of darkness had met their match at last. When Madam Tracy brought the tea in, he was snoring. She tactfully closed the door, and rather thankfully as well, because she had a séance due in 20 minutes, and it was no good turning down money these days. Although Madam Tracy was by many yardsticks quite stupid, she had an instinct in certain matters, and when it came to dabbling in the occult, her reasoning was faultless. Dabbling, she'd realised, was exactly what her customers wanted. They didn't want to be shoved in it up to their necks. They didn't want the multi-planular mysteries of time.